Good morning. I'm Brian, and I'm a member of the teaching team here at the Ventura Vineyard. It's my privilege to share with you today. If you're new to us, please understand that there are multiple teachers that speak on Sunday morning. Next week, there'll be a different face, a different teaching, but the same Ventura Vineyard. Before we get started and get to the title of my teaching today, I'd like to share something from the bottom of my heart. It seems that we've been living in a story for over a year now, a story that none of us saw coming or even desired. Plans interrupted, upended, roles changed, altered, wrecked. It leaves one wondering what's around the corner. There's no easy answer. However, as a very minor participant in this story, I do have one request. A request I can't wait for. What am I desirous of? I wish for the removal of the word unprecedented from our daily lexicon. I'm pretty sure that for approximately the last 372 days, I've read or heard this word, not just confined to this pandemic. I think we all understand that there are like two people left alive on the planet that were around in 1918 when the influenza outbreak of that year broke out. So I give the novel coronavirus a pass for the U word being applied so liberally. It's just that unprecedented has been used in relationship to just about everything on top of COVID-19. Politics, economy, education, climate, delivery services, NFL quarterbacks, and pizza, to name a few. Please, writers, editors, news readers, pontificators, please stop. Unprecedented is a word I'm truly ready to wave goodbye to for the moment, along with so many other obstacles in my life. Not all of them linguistic, by the way, but I digress. To my point, I anxiously anticipate having unprecedented replaced by other words. Words like normal, average, and even dull. I personally feel a lot like Charlie and Willy Wonka. I find myself waiting for, searching for, hoping for, to find the modern-day equivalent of the golden ticket, the vaccine. Since my wife and I are respectively numbers 280,305,026 and 27, we have to wait. I personally struggle at times with tolerating delays. That's why today's teaching is entitled Patience. A quick note before we jump into the message. All of the scriptures, word translations, books mentioned, quotes referenced in today's teaching are located in the sermon notes section of our app under today's date, March 7th, 2021. Our current teaching series is entitled Uncommon Sense. It's about looking at unpacking biblical truth found in the Bible's wisdom literature. Simply put, wisdom literature is a guide to being a successful human. There's primarily two distinct types of wisdom literature in the Bible. There's short proverbs, what we'll start off our discussion today with, which present points with dramatic contrast and truth. Most proverbs, though ancient in origin, are applicable for today and contain easily discernible guidelines and truths. The second kind of wisdom literature in the Bible is the long literary works, like Job, which we will touch on at the finish. Ecclesiastes, Jonah, these works deal with life's major questions and mysteries. These long-form pieces are challenging and, quite frankly, not so easy to unpack. So for today, our proverb to kick things off is Proverbs 14:29. Whoever is patient has great understanding, but one who is quick-tempered displays folly. Another way of stating the first half of the proverb is to say, a person who is slow to anger waits, sits, and listens. That person has great understanding. The practice of being patient takes time. On the other side, the second half, a person who angers quickly, who's impatient, their actions often lead to making stupid mistakes, or as we often say, poor life choices. These mistakes can fall on the spectrum anywhere from, let's say, buying a toaster years ago for $25 on credit, right? And for the next 16 years, it sits there with the final cost of that toaster being $762.32. All because you said to yourself way back when, I deserve this. I work hard. So on one end, you have the toaster. And on the other hand, in the extreme, we have road rage. Somebody who's under time pressure that winds up making a heinous mistake. If patience were a common attribute of humanity, the world would be a very different place. I'm not sure that we live in patient times. There are multiple words, definitions of the word patient in the biblical language, in the languages specifically of Hebrew and Greek. Today we will look at a very specific definition. It's in the New Testament. There's this bit of scripture that you may have heard a time or two. 1 Corinthians 13:4. This is from the New International Version. Love is patient. Love is kind. It does not envy. It does not boast. It is not proud. On so many occasions, I've heard this word or this set of words, this bit of scripture. And on so many occasions, I've read them aloud during a wedding ceremony, with good reason. Besides being God-breathed, right, being scripture, it's just straight-up beautiful prose. Love is patient. I always thought the context or the use of this word in its context in this passage of Scripture fell in line with its appearance in other sections of the biblical text as meaning, you know, cheerful, hopeful, mild, gentle. In preparing today, I had one of those aha moments when I examined the various biblical translations for 4/5 of the love is proclamations in 1 Corinthians 13:4. You know, love is kind, does not envy, does not boast, it's not proud. They remained pretty much the same, pretty consistent. Love is kind. It's not envious. It's not puffed up, or it's not boastful or proud. The first proclamation, though, love is patient. There's that word. This word, as it is specifically used in the passage, did not carry the romantic notion that I had for so long brought to its meaning. The use of the word patient, according to a number of translations and Strong's exhaustive concordance of the Bible, if you want to look it up, it's number 3114 in the Greek. It's long suffering, to bear, to endure. I'll say that again. Long suffering, to bear, to endure. Having been married now for 36 years, I know that cheerful, hopeful, mild, gentle have played a significant role in my relationship with my wife. Thanks to my wife. She has taught me and continues to be a living example of these attributes. This is the kind of love that long suffers, bears, and endures. This kind of love, it's rarely touched upon in a wedding ceremony. Among that setting, you know, picture it, the flowers all gathered in their finest, the expression of adoration on the couple's face. It's easy to dismiss the line, in sickness and in health, if that part of the vows are even used at all. Thankfully, for most of us, that sickness bit doesn't manifest within our respective relationships too quickly. However, those words are there for a reason. Any who have watched aging parents, or relatives, or close friends grapple with long-term illnesses and the profound love expressed by the caregiving spouse and or family member, they have a deep knowledge of what it means to suffer long, to bear and endure. That kind of patience, to learn, it requires two things: time and the experience of difficulties. How much time? How many difficulties? It depends on your aptitude in the study and the pursuit of patience. For some of us who are slow learners, how about we start with a solid measure of time? Not necessarily an arbitrary one, a timely measure, to be sure, of time, 40 days. I started out talking about how impatient I am to not hear the word unprecedented, and I don't want to hear it used anymore. But how about this word? It's another one you're familiar with, quarantine, right? We've heard quarantine a few times in the last year, for sure. Here's a trivia question. Where did this word come from? Yeah, you can write it on the side there. But I'll give you the answer real quick. It's a bit of nautical nonsense. Quarantine originates from the Italian, literally the definition of space of 40 days. The word began its use in the 15th and 16th centuries in Venice and was the designated period of time in which all ships were required to be isolated before passengers and crew could go ashore during the Black Death plague. The number 40, both years and days, is associated throughout the biblical text with trial, testing, and long suffering. A few examples of the biblical 40s that feature time, experience, and difficulties. At your experience of difficulties, at your leisure, please access the VV app, take a look at this thread of scriptures. So, the first one, God cleanses the world with 40 days of rain and sets Noah and his family afloat. That's Genesis chapters 6 through 8. Moses fasted for 40 days as he was with God and wrote down the Ten Commandments. That's Exodus 34:28. Moses wanders for 40 years with the children of Israel in the wilderness. Yeah. Numbers 14:26 through 35. Goliath, right, taunts Israel for 40 days before a teenager by the name of David hits him in the head with a rock. Little side note and a book recommendation. There's a book by Malcolm Gladwell called David and Goliath. And he points to the argument made by a historian, Baruch Halperin, that David was a bit of a ringer, that Goliath was hoping that he was going to come up against somebody like himself, but instead he came against David, who was a skilled, very skilled, obviously, slinger, a fast projectile warrior. Basically, he was an artillery on foot, and he was moving against Goliath, who was the slow, heavy infantryman, right? Heavily armored. Goliath didn't stand a chance. The second part of Gladwell's book deals with desirable difficulties, which speaks to what we're talking about today. How difficulties form, shape, and set up humans for success. So my last 40-day reference definitely plays into this Lent period that we find ourselves in now, as we move toward Holy Week and Easter. Jesus fasted for 40 days. For 40 days. That's how he started his ministry. He was baptized. God spoke over him. And then he walked into the desert. This was the beginning, the start of his public ministry. The people of Jesus' day viewed the open desert the same way we view a graveyard, right? At midnight, it's spooky. It's a place where demons are attracted and linger. right? And Jesus, after being baptized, he walks into the desert for 40 days. No food. Alone. For 40 days. And at the end of those 40 days, when his body was weak, he was tested by Satan and triumphs. So now, to conclude this short survey of the word patience as defined by long-suffering, we have to turn to one of those long literary works that I spoke of at the beginning, and that's Job. 42 chapters long is the book of Job. I invite you to read it as your leisure. It's challenging and asks some very, very serious questions, which we won't answer today. Here's a summary. Job is a wealthy man with a wife and 10 kids. He lives obediently before God and serves him. The adversary, Satan, comes to God and questions Job's integrity, basically saying to God that Job only serves God because of all that he has received. With God's approval, Satan hits Job with all kinds of disasters. He loses all, his wealth, his family, and his health. Central to the story are three friends that show up for an extended period of time, first in silence, and then all three basically saying to Job that his misfortune is the result of his actions, his sin, his failings. After many, many segments of this in the story, God silences them all by stepping in. In chapter 38, here's a part of that, verses 4 through 7. This is God speaking. "Where were you when I laid the earth's foundation? Tell me, if you understand who marked off its dimensions. Surely you know. Who stretched a measuring line across it? On what were its footings set? Or who laid its cornerstone? While the morning stars sang together and all the angels shouted for joy." It's powerful. There's a little bit of comfort there, I think, for us in a time that teaches patience. He restores Job beyond what he had lost. God does. And his friends now have to depend on him. The book of Job asks many questions that have fostered much debate, as well as multiple books published. It asks larger questions such as, why do the innocent suffer? And what is the value of suffering? Unlike the proverb we started with, and the book of Proverbs in its entirety, with its dramatic comparisons, you know, it's, you know, here is this and here is this, a positive and a negative. It's right and obvious choices that are to be made. The book of Job is not clear cut. It leaves us with questions about the very nature of God, right? Good versus evil, and humankind's place in the struggle between the two. Maybe, after looking at these examples of displaying the type of love that is characterized by long-suffering, bearing, and enduring, many of you are left feeling woefully inadequate, truly not up to the task. When you teach, you always want to wait for people to remember what your message was about. If, as a teacher, you can distill it down on a Sunday morning to one point, I believe that's a good thing, probably because I personally can't remember more than that. I don't want to leave you with a feeling of inadequacy and hopelessness. I'm going to leave you today with a bit of scripture, a quote from the Apostle Paul, a human who well understood what it was like to love as expressed through suffering, bearing, and enduring. Having been beaten, flogged, hit with rocks, shipwrecked, betrayed, and jailed, may his words alleviate some of the inadequacies felt. 2 Corinthians 12, 7b through 10. I was given a thorn in my flesh, a messenger of Satan, to torment me. 3 times I pleaded with the Lord to take it away from me, but he said to me, "My grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in weakness. Therefore, I will boast all the more gladly about my weaknesses, so that Christ's power may rest on me. That is why, for Christ's sake, I delight in weaknesses, in insults, in hardships, in persecutions, in difficulties. For when I am weak, then I am strong." We don't have to fear being weak in any way, including this topic of patience, of loving through long suffering. In God's strength and love, we are made strong.